Once more unto the breach, dear friends, else close the wall up with our English dead. Good morning again, and we're back with another hour of the Personal Wealth Coach. This is Jake McClure. If you would like to join the conversation this hour, the number in here is 254-773-1400. I would certainly appreciate the additional conversation. All right. We ended last hour talking about the hack of the Democratic National Convention and sounds like some other areas as well. A caller called in and Paul and said that the whole concept of what Trump said was either a joke, when did we lose our sense of humor, what Trump said was sarcastic. The media seems to have grabbed onto it as if he's somehow said, good job, Putin. He didn't say that. It kind of sounded like it to a lot of people, but he didn't say that. It's also, you know, how someone takes what someone says is kind of irrelevant here. What I'm talking about is a different subject. I spent the whole last hour talking about the life cycles of organizations, whether it's a system of government, whether it's a form of regulation, or if it's a company. It's the same in families as well. One of the major strengths, maybe even the primary strength to our economy, is that we protect property rights. If you own something, it belongs to you. Now, there are reasons why it could be taken away, but the Constitution is pretty clear on those reasons. We have an illegal search and seizure concept that doesn't exist in most of the world. If somebody's going to come and take your house to put a highway through, they have to go through a pretty long and arduous process and then offer you a fair market value for it. And I've got a caller coming in, so I'm going to take the caller and then we'll continue with this conversation. Caller on 773-1400, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm enjoying your solo soliloquy.
There must be something wrong with your brain. You should have that checked out.
Well, that's what I've been told anyway. Anyway, I wanted to comment real quick on this WikiLeaks thing.
Yep.
With the emails from the Democratic National Committee.
Good.
First of all, in order to do some kind of damage control, it was the Democratic Party or the Democrat Party that alleged that Russia did this to help Donald Trump. And then Donald Trump turns around and, wise or not, quipped, well, maybe they have these 33,000 emails that Hillary had, you know, and we'd like to see those too, you know. And
right.
Then, you know, it all gets distracted. Everybody gets distracted from what the real issue is, that,
right.
That a party used, colluded with the journalists to make sure that one of their nominees people running for the nominee is actually nominated instead of another. That I think that's the real issue here.
Well, let's stop just a second. The real issue underneath, and there was some collusion, but the collusion was, and I've looked through some of this stuff. I am culpable in this, and that this wasn't supposed to be allowed to be viewed by anyone. But I've looked through the emails, and the Democratic National Convention did exactly what the Republicans did when Donald Trump was getting close to nomination. The leadership has opinions, the leadership of a party, but they're not elected in a general election. They're elected by other party members, so they may not have the same view as the majority of people. If you remember what was going on before the Republican convention, when they were talking about, you know, having a walk-in or seeing if they could vote somebody else in other than Trump, what do you think the Republicans had as far as emails at the RNC going back and forth on that very subject?
That's a good point.
That subject, and this is the point, that kind of conversation has gone out on by Pony Express and by every other mode of communication in our political system since we've had a political system. You can go back to any news of any presidential election. If there's a leak about what's being said in a party about any of the people in contention for a nomination, you're going to find some negative stuff in there, too. The negative stuff that the DNC were talking about, yeah, the chair said some pretty outrageous things, but the chair really gets to set when the convention takes place and where. The leadership there is not as big as it seems. The rules are, the rules committee is much more important, and that person is, I think that's Dana Perino. She is definitely as clean as a whistle in the emails. So thinking back, what you're saying is easy because we have psychologically there's something called a heuristic. It's an assumption that we make that we don't even know we're making. And that it goes through the most common one, goes through us in every direction. It's what you see is all there is. If you're presented with a bunch of data and you don't really know where the data came from, then you make your decision based on what's in the data. But you do know where the data came from. You know that it was stolen by someone. Now, originally, the Democrats came out and said that it was the Russians that did it. Well, now the FBI is saying the same thing. The FBI, and this is really hard for a lot of people to comprehend, but the majority of the FBI is Republican. They're a non-political organization. They're not trying to be political. But most of law enforcement, most of the military, leans Republican and leans hard by a big majority. We're talking upper 60%. If the FBI as a group is saying this in a anonymous way, and none of them anonymously are saying we don't think it's the Russians, it was probably the Russians.
How do they know it wasn't some kid sitting in a basement?
I can tell you that. This is one of my areas of interest. When a kid in a basement does it, if they're to coin the hacker terms, just for the lulls, just for the laughs, just for the laugh out louds, they do it because they want other people to recognize them. They want it in their ego. There is no way that a kid in a basement is going to hack the DNC, release all of these emails to the DNC, or to WikiLeaks, huge amount of data released to WikiLeaks, with no joke attached, no goofiness attached. This was a serious actor. This was not somebody that is swatting the neighbors. Swatting the neighbors meaning spoofing a call to 911 saying there's a hostage.
Weren't the Republicans a little more open about their dislike of Donald Trump? I mean, instead of working behind the scenes without, you know, let me put it this way. Bernie Sanders almost beat Hillary. If it hadn't been for certain things, you know, Hillary probably would have won anyway, but he got very close to
getting
up there.
He didn't almost beat her, because let me explain something about this. The way the Democrats do their election process in the primaries is different than the Republicans.
Yeah, I know that.
They split it, superdelegates and so on. That's one piece of it. But even in the delegate count, Bernie Sanders wasn't up, because he would go to do speeches with massive turnouts at colleges. But the way the Democrats have for decades set up the way they weight a vote is based on majority Democrat districts in an area. So if instead of going to the college in a Republican district and having a lot of support at the college, he had done the same speech for the same people at a Democratic district, he would have gotten more votes. Now, those are rules. They're clearly posted beforehand. There was no switcheroo that took place in there. Understanding the rules before you play the game is a pretty important part of that. So that's what he was upset about. He wanted to run on the inspiration of his ideas rather than following the electoral process. Now, whether or not those rules were correct, it's up to them to change them if they're not correct. They were just as vocal against Bernie Sanders as a lot of people were against Trump. If you recall, there were people booed off the stage at the convention for Trump for not endorsing him.
Real quick, I kind of admire Bernie Sanders, the way he backed Hillary. That was very big of him, and it just shows you that, you know, the poor guy He'll probably never get a chance to run for president again, but
right.
He probably would have been someone that would have been very honest and trustworthy. I may not believe in his politics, but just like Jimmy Carter, no matter what you think of him, he was an honest man.
He really reminded me of Truman. Truman was not a popular man most of his life, and then through flukes of assassinations and health issues, became president. And by assassination, I don't mean the president was, but the fear of assassination was high amongst the vice presidential picks at the time. Truman was an honest man, very, very much stood to his entire, I mean, you could look at him any point in his political career and he was saying exactly the same thing. He didn't budge. And that's one of the problems that we have with the mainstream political world right now is they change their positions so regularly. It's really nice to see Bernie Sanders sticking to his guns, although he would never want to call him that because he's very anti-gun. But the concept of sticking to the same message repeatedly forever is not something we see very often. And I totally agree. I don't think he would have been a good president at all. I'm very much like Jimmy Carter. But and part of the problem that he had in his election is that that's the way he was running his election too. It should be based on the merit of the conversation rather than where you're having the conversation, where you're making your speech, where the elections are taking place. Let's take a step back, though. Let's take a step back from the strengths and the merits of any of the candidates. Let's go.
Hey, Jake, I'm going to hang up and listen, okay?
Okay, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Let's go back big picture. Let's look at the system as a whole. The whole system, and I don't just mean the political system, the whole system is based on the concept that we have the ability, not just the ability, but the right to pursue our interests, whether that's the pursuit of happiness or life, liberty, or, and those are not written in our rights, but it is a good statement of what we believe. Our conceptual enterprise, our government, has been very nimble. It is big, but nimble, because we can replace the leadership of one of the houses every 2 years. That means that the spending is very, very easy to control by the voter if we make the decision in mass. What's interesting here in the political debates going on and the big run-ups to the presidential election is how little we're hearing about the congressional elections. Because while the president gets all the credit, and the blame for that matter, for the economy, for taxes, and for many other things, it really lies in the lap of the legislative branch, all of that stuff. And we're really good at looking the wrong way when we should be looking the right way. Intellectual property and property rights are the foundation of everything that we are. The fact that we can start a business here and somebody else can't come along and steal our ideas and use them without recourse. If we were in China or Mexico or even Canada, if you come up with an invention and you're late to the patent office and somebody else saw you using it and patents it first, you're out of luck. In the United States, if you can prove you used it first, you get the patent. You get the ability to make your profit off of it. That comes down to something that is the strongest portion of who we are as a government, who we are as a people, who we are as a culture. The fact that you get to keep the results of your hard work. Now, it doesn't always work out that way, but our system is strongly weighted in that direction. The American dream is the concept that you can start from nothing and make yourself huge, and you can't make yourself huge if somebody can take all your ideas. Intellectual property is just as valuable as physical property. And that's the underlining fact when the DNC got hacked. They hacked our system, that nobody has the right to do that without a search warrant. If the government did it, we'd be coming down on the government. If a small political organization did it, we'd be coming down on them. It was WikiLeaks. And we kind of shrug our shoulders and say, we can't do much about WikiLeaks, so let's just read the emails and see what's in there. Ooh, look at this good stuff. That's the same as saying, man, I hate that tabloids exist, but man, I'm going to buy one the next time I'm in the store. WikiLeaks is pure democracy, which is the opposite of what we are. It's much closer to socialism than what we would think democracy really is. If everybody has a say, then everyone should own everything. That's pure democracy. WikiLeaks is a strong proponent of the idea of no intellectual property rights. It should belong to everyone. Open source everything. Even Edward Snowden came down on WikiLeaks, and most of you who listened to me for very long know that I'm not a big fan of Edward Snowden. I think he did something that I don't know what other way could have been used to bring it to our attention, but I bet there are ways. There are independent pieces of the government that can be approached, even going to the Senate or Congress with it would have been better than releasing it the way he did. He's put a lot of people's lives in danger. WikiLeaks has done it worse. And Snowden mentioned that they need to put a better filter on what they release. Because not only did they release those little snippets about the DNC asking Bernie Sanders possibly about his religion, or the DNC trying to give a slightly more support to Hillary Clinton. And if you read the emails, there's no smoking gun email or it'd be quoted right now. And I've been reading emails. I've been looking at the ones that are the closest to those. And they are, as a whole, if you read them all as a group, it looks like a push against Bernie Sanders. But there's not a single place where they say, we don't want Bernie Sanders. That's interesting. Okay, so just in the data that we shouldn't be able to see, there's not a problem with the emails going back and forth, except that it looks like they didn't like Bernie Sanders very much. Okay. WikiLeaks also released the social security numbers of all of the donors to the Democratic National Committee. Just think about that for a second. Now we're talking about theft of an individual because of his or her political beliefs. The ability to change their financial future based on how they vote. The nature of our system is to be anonymous there, to allow us to vote the way our conscience leads us. For that to be posted, and that's not the only thing lately that WikiLeaks has posted either. They just, last week, they posted a list of all of the female registered voters in Turkey. What possible good use does that have being public? What possible good use is it to say, look, all these ladies in a sort of secular system, but very definitely Islamic leaning, and they're registered to vote. What do you think that's going to do? They're in a war with ISIS right now. If you think that WikiLeaks and Russia is helping in any way by releasing these things, that they're somehow going to meet your common interest in some way, recognize that their interests and our interests are completely different. There's a temporary, maybe 5-minute overlap where they think something very similar to you. Let's not get in bed with them. There's a problem there waiting to happen. And if we don't get together as Americans the same way my siblings did when somebody else attacked one of us, we're allowed to bicker amongst ourselves as much as we want. It's one of our strengths. We're great at arguing with each other until we're hoarse. Keep doing that. It's good. It's great for us. It allows us not to swing too far in any one direction. But if we don't at least come together on one concept here, and it's hard to do right now because we're slinging the most mud right now, we have to call a timeout for a moment and say, rules have just been violated by somebody that's not even playing the game, that is trying to use our system for their own needs. Now, our tendency is to go back to what's important to us and say, who wins the election is all important. If we have candidates that can look at this and see it's a common problem, this is the beginning of the information age, not the end. This is not the first hack that's going to happen by a foreign power. There's going to be a lot more. If we don't start now to say, what are we going to do about it when it happens? How are we going to treat it as a nation? Not as a party, as a nation. Because we are Americans. If somebody comes in and hacks one party, it's the same to them. They don't know the difference between the two parties. They don't know our big important argument points about taxes or about who's paying for college or about any of that. They don't care. They're trying to destabilize our system. We have to stop and not let them do it. This is one of Russia's greatest strengths right now. They are the foremost nation in the world, and they passed us up, which is a bit insane, at destabilizing other countries. We don't do it on purpose. We actively try not to destabilize people. We wind up doing it anyway. It's like using a backhoe to do gardening work. We may be having too big a tool involved to get the fine detail. The Russians know they're using backhoes. They're using bigger tools than that, and they do it on purpose. They're not trying to garden. They're trying to make a hole where the garden is. If we're destabilized, we're not a threat to them. Something that is incredibly important that people are forgetting because the news is not on it right now is there is still a hot war, not a cold war, going on in Ukraine. People are shooting every day. There are artillery rounds going off. The Russians are still involved. I've spoken about this across the Baltics and to the south. The Russians are involved in hot wars, destabilizing their neighbors, and taking advantage of that destability to annex more and more and more. If we get trapped into a political discussion that is completely ignoring the rest of the world, this is how World War I and World War II got started. We got to be aware of what's going on in the world. And I have another caller coming in on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Jake. This is Bill in Temple.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, there is a very interesting book. I think I shared it with your dad. We talked about it some, called Barbarians to Bureaucrats.
Yeah, excellent.
It was written in the 80s, and it's still available in paperback, but you have to get on Amazon and look for it.
I read it.
It's a print.
It's a great book. Yeah, it's a fantastic book. They use Welch as a great example at GE, how he came in and shook up GE from going bureaucratic to back to barbarianism, that life cycle.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it really is an interesting, very entertaining book because it's kind of done in a story fashion. Each chapter describes the different phases of the corporate life cycles. But to your point earlier, it's also, I think, a lesson about any organization or group of people, because whether it's a church or a school or a government or whatever, it appears that as human beings, we tend to sort of go through the same cyclic process of how we do interactions with each other and how we get strong and then get weak and how we succeed and how we fail.
Right, and it matches our life cycle as a whole. I study why we make decisions. It's behavioral economics. Why are we making the decisions we do? A lot more of that has to do with what's happening in our brains than what we say we're doing. What we're discovering is that most of the decisions that we make on a day-to-day basis, the vast majority of them, not just most, we make a decision, and when we're asked why we did it, we make up a reason for it based on what we know. It's really easy to change the reason why we do something, because most of the time we don't have a reason. We're doing it because it's a habit. And there's another example of this, and one that's really necessary for us to recognize. When we invaded Iraq, a lot of people say, well, I was never for that. The reality is that the statistics, the polls at the time said that 84% of the United States was for invading Iraq.
Right.
That doesn't leave a whole lot of people that were against it. We have a really good, and it isn't that they're lying so much as the way our memories work, it's the same reason that most people, not everyone, but most people remember childhood. If you're thinking of a childhood memory, looking at your mother or sitting at a table or whatever, you remember it not from the height of a child, but from your current height. That's a majority of people remember it as if they were living their childhood the way they are today.
Right.
we influence our memories with our current thoughts. And we tend to ignore the things that are the real reasons why we make decisions. The last caller was, I mean, he said some really good things, but one of the things that I keyed on, he was talking about the DNC has released all this data to the WikiLeaks folks, and then it showed the real important part is that they didn't like Bernie Sanders. And I brought up, well, wait, the Republicans didn't like Donald Trump, and the emails would have shown that too. We ignore the way we get the information so often, and we use it as the source of our decision-making, or at least what we claim is the source of our decision-making. If you think of any candidate, they're going to appeal to your emotion, whatever it is now, not what it was last week. And that emotion is going to influence your activity. And then you'll have a rationalization that goes with it. And it's part of everything that we do. It's in the corporate cycle, too. It's in our life cycle. But one thing that we do know in the studying of brains, when people get married, they tend to get slightly more conservative. And when they have kids, they tend to get a lot more conservative. This is a tendency. This isn't across the board. There are some people that go the other direction. But the majority of people tend to get more conservative the more they accumulate and the more they have to lose. Well, that makes sense because you want to conserve the things that you don't want to lose. And liberalism tends to come at its base, at the very beginning, from people that don't have a lot to lose and would like to see the world be a better place somehow, their opinion being the reason why it's a better is sometimes arguable, but that's right. What's driving them. The same happens in the corporate life cycle when you're having the small businesses coming up trying to make the world a better place. I mean, look at Google's motto, do no evil. Look at all of these little companies that said, we're going to make a difference. We're going to change the world as we know it. And they do. What we have to remember at each of those spots is how they did it, why they did it. Because remembering it that it happened after the fact, remembering a time, it's hard, I know, weird, because it's not been that long, but it's hard to remember when we didn't have smartphones, much less cell phones. And I bet you there was a time in your life that cell phones were not a big part of your life. But it's hard to imagine, and people even say it, what did we do without these? And it's a question that has some degree of seriousness. We don't know what we did before the change that changed the way we did things. Our memories work that way. That
you
means,
know, I think, too, that's the value of reading something like I described this book, because it's
Barbarians
got
to
a lot
bureaucrats.
Bigger ramifications than just economics. When you really stand back and look at it, you begin to see in your own personal experience, whether it's your church or your family or whatever group of people it is, that the same dynamics and cycles seem to exist. And that's a revelation that you don't usually see till you're way down the road.
Right. And one thing that I've learned about economics as it's expanding into actual science instead of technical measurements is that economics is anthropology and psychology. It is not separated. It's just easier to measure in money.
Right.
It's the metric that we all use for our behavior. We may say we don't want to do this, and then, as a group, the whole country says pornography is a bad thing, or whatever. This is a good example. But if I can look at the numbers and see that pornography is more profitable than it has ever been, then I know that there's a psychological issue going on in there somewhere. If we as a country say one thing and are doing another, and we do it in a lot of places. Back when we had a 55-mile-an-hour speed limit, if I asked people if they were law-abiding citizens, they would say yes. And I would say, do you go 70 miles an hour in a 55? And they say yes. So which is which? And the reality was the law was wrong. But it was still the law, and for them to claim to be law-abiding citizens while knowingly breaking a law, this area of study is an economic area, and one great behavioral economics study was on diets and heart attacks. What does that have to do with the economy? It wasn't measuring the outcome to the economy from a heart attack. It was saying, why do people quit diets? Why do they mess up? And so they studied people that had quadruple bypass heart surgeries that needed to have a change in diet and a change in exercise. And the average length of time that they maintained the diet and exercise was between 1 and 3 months. This is something they knew. They're going to die if they don't. And the reason this, you know, there's a health study that says that. Well, the behaviorists, the psychologists and the economists come in and they say, why is that? What is it that's causing them to fail? And it's the same subject. We fail when we use willpower. We're doing a great job. We're able to keep a discipline. We've done it for a while, and we say, we got this. It's done. And those are the words that come up in the study. We got this. I got this. I've done a good job. So anybody that's ever been on a diet, they're on it for 3 weeks. They're exercising. They pass the refrigerator. They look in there, and they go, wow. They're usually tired and hungry when it happens. Those are things that are easily studied. Those are pass the refrigerator and go, I've been doing great for 3 weeks. I can splurge a little bit. I'm fine.
Right.
And then they do it again an hour later. I've been doing great for 3 weeks. It's fine. And the whole next day. And 3 weeks afterwards, they're still saying, I've been doing great for 3 weeks. Because our point of memory is we're lying to ourselves a little bit. Not intentionally, obviously not intentionally, because we're the ones that start the diet. We're the ones that start the exercise program. But there are parts of us that are saying, I want that food. And I deserve that food, and I've done a good job, so give it to me. And we give it to us, and we get our reward there, and we say, yeah, we did a good job. The thing about willpower is that the more you use it, the weaker you are in it if you're using it in a short period of time. That's really weird, but it's the same as if you've just run a 100-yard dash and somebody asks you to run up some stairs. You're more likely to say, I'm going to walk up the stairs or take the elevator. When you use your willpower, when you say, I'm not going to eat the cookie, and this is where the studies, there's a guy, Dr. Bauman in Florida, the University of Florida, has done these studies with chocolate chip cookies and radishes. And he's got the smell of chocolate chip cookies in there. And he has people come by, and they are a large group of people over the years that are all maintaining really good scores in their classes. And he had them go through and told them not to eat the chocolate chip cookie. They were allowed to, but they were requested not to. But they were supposed to stand in the room next to them for a while having conversations and smelling it, and then go in the next room and take a test. And what they found is against the control group or the people that were allowed to eat the cookie, they didn't perform as well. They taxed their system. They actually burned calories to prevent eating cookies. It's a hard thing, but if we know we have these assumptions, these heuristics in our minds, they're there. We don't know they're there. Well, let's find them. They're why we're making decisions. Let's get ahead of them and actually think about our decisions before, not after the fact. This is very true when it comes to a big hack like this. And I'm focusing on this because when it's a hack against a company, we all get on board. We all point the finger at whoever did it and say, that was bad. What can we do to make it better? But when it's a hack against a political organization, we should say it more, not less. We shouldn't be divided by our difference with that party. And anybody that's listened to me for very long knows I'm not a Democrat. I'm also not a Republican. I don't identify with either of them. But I see this as an attack on the core of who we are for one of them to be hacked, because it's going to be the next one next time or the time after that. At some point, hacking needs to be part of the conversation. We need to say, what is really sacred to us as a nation? And if we don't, then just expect to keep being punched by other people. This is the same thing that led to 9/11, when we didn't back up our troops when they were being attacked by Al-Qaeda. We could have prevented a big war if we had nipped it in the bud at the beginning. We don't want a cyber war to creep up on us. We want to be prepared for it, and we want to know that we're in it together. No matter what the political season is, we're Americans. And that's a hard thing for the political parties to see right now, because they're blinded by their own, just like Bernie Sanders, blinded by their own support base.
Right.
What they're missing is that the Democrats are a smaller party than the independents now, and the Republicans are a smaller party than the Democrats now. That didn't happen overnight. It's happened slowly, but they're not recognizing it. They're getting too polarized. This is an example of that polarity. This is a point when they should be linking hands and saying, how do we solve this? Now let's get back to throwing mud at each other. Not this back and forth and shock and jokes. And it should be part of our rhetoric on both sides. You can't attack Americans, even if we're in the middle of this. I really wish Donald Trump would say that. I wish he would come out instead of joking the other way. I wish, because I think he believes it somewhere. I think Hillary Clinton believes it somewhere. I think they both think that they are going to be great presidents. If they don't put America first like they're claiming, if they're both of them are saying, I want to work across the aisle, blah, blah, the same thing every presidential candidate has said forever, they need to put their money where their mouth is. Step up right now. And unfortunately, because the hack was on the Democrats, it's up to Trump to come out and say, hey, this was wrong. We got to do something about this. We got to build a... Maybe have Mexico pay for a cyber wall. That would work. But at least it would be a response instead of ignoring it and then using it as ammunition in the next conversation.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Well, listen, I appreciate taking my call and look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate you calling. I've been talking for a couple of hours. And I've got to play some commercials. And after the commercials, I'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you would like to call in, the number is 254-773-1400. And I'm back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. This is Jake McClure. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number to call in here is 773-1400. That's 254-773-1400. Wanted to kind of wrap up that conversation that's been going for a couple of hours, but use some more examples. Last week, Lynn Woolley called in at the end of the second hour and talked about a merger between two major insurance companies. They're top five type big, too big to fail, and the Justice Department is saying this may be too big a thing. This is going to influence the marketplace. And the companies were Anthem and Cigna. Let me come at this for the reason why they wanted to merge and the reason why the Justice Department doesn't think it's a good idea, and then some common sense. Common sense with all of the pieces on the table. All right. Anthem and Cigna want to merge. That's pretty obvious. They're big companies. They want to get together. They want to get rid of the overhead that they're sharing so that they can concentrate on their revenue gathering. When we're talking about insurance, and I mentioned this last week, but I'm going to go over it real quick again. Insurance is regulated at the state level. And some states don't do a whole lot of regulation on it. Other states do a massive amount of regulation on it. If you're a major national insurance company and you want to sell health insurance, say, through the government exchange or through the state exchange, or you want to be a part of any of that, you want to sell insurance, period, even if you're not on that exchange, you want to sell it just to the side. In order to do that, you've got to make sure that you're meeting the laws of every state in which you're doing business. And if we're talking about traffic laws, you'd think there's no big difference. It's not a big deal whether you're in Austin or Boston. There are going to be big city traffic laws that you're following. Parking should be somehow labeled. But you can see how parking requirements in Boston may not be something you're familiar with living in Temple. There may be a sign with a whole bunch of conflicting information on it. How are you supposed to avoid the traffic ticket? Well, maybe you can't. I went to Florida recently for a conference, and it was Orlando, and leaving the airport thinking I'm not going to hit any toll roads. I'm just going to go straight to the hotel. The only way out of the airport is toll roads. it may be clearly marked. It may be said at the rental car location somewhere. But when somebody's getting off of a flight and they've got kids with them or whatever, it's really hard to keep up on that stuff. Now magnify that by about 100-fold, maybe 1,000-fold, in each state for every insurance company. And there's a problem because they've got to meet different criteria everywhere. This is one of the problems with the Affordable Care Act. They wanted to measure like product against like product, and they said this is going to be a great thing. Well, you can't do it. If you're a national organization and you make bronze, silver, whatever plan you want to make, it's going to be slightly different than all of the other competitors, and all of the other competitors are going to be slightly different than them, just like an Android is different than an iPhone. They're not being printed at the same place. And the way they alter their policies for each state is different. When we put so much regulation, we being all of us, each state, they don't want to give up on that level, that regulation. It doesn't make for easily profitable companies. The Affordable Care Act has something in it that's called a medical loss ratio. The idea behind it was that they don't want insurance companies to spend less than 80% of the premiums they receive on anything other than medical stuff. So it's a pretty common sense approach. Hey, if you're going to regulate this area, which may or may not be a good thing, the marketplace could regulate it for it. But it's the law, so let's just look at it. The law says that they're not allowed to spend less than 80% on medical costs for the premiums that you give them. That leaves 20% of the premiums to do other things with. Well, what other things? Well, having a big legal organization in every state is one of those things. Making sure that the people that sell the insurance get paid is one of those things. Making sure that they know where you live and that they are tracking the actual medical benefits that are going to you and not. The administrative role of that organization has to be no more than 20%. We're seeing a lot of big companies leave the government marketplace, the healthcare.gov. We're seeing them leave. United was announcing that in 2017. They're going to be out of that market because they're spending 87% on health stuff, and there's not enough room in there to make a profit. They're losing money on the round trip, and you can't make that up in volume. One way to make that up is to merge with other people doing the same things and then just have some people doing it their way in a given state. The problem with it is that doesn't make the market better. It doesn't make more insurance get sold, and it doesn't really lower the overhead. You may both be doing the same thing, but once you combine, you're not competing against each other anymore. You're competing against the other people. It levels the playing field, and you're back to the same margins again. What the Justice Department says is these big insurance companies, if they merge, they're going to be able to start setting the standard across the board on what premiums get paid and what they pay to health companies for doing health things. And that's kind of where the nitty-gritty hits. There was a lot of trumpets and fanfares over the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, whatever you wish to call it, being passed. Some people were really down on it. Some people were really up on it. The reality is that it's got some good parts and some bad parts, and some of the bad parts are really bad and some of the good parts are really good. Let's get it fixed. Right now, the thing that we need to fix isn't that, though. It's making a simplification to insurance laws across the nation. It already happened starting in the 30s in stocks. Stocks and bonds have the same code that they have to follow no matter what state they're in. And that didn't happen at the federal level. It didn't happen by the U.S. government coming out and saying, we're passing an amendment to the Constitution that means we can regulate securities trades everywhere. It happened because every state passed what they call the blue sky laws. Every state in our union passed a law that was very similar to every other state's law when it came to how to buy and sell equities and bonds on the open market. We need to do that again with insurance. Unfortunately, states make a lot of money by regulating insurance. I don't know if that's unfortunate or fortunate, or something is wrong with the system, though, in that every bureaucratic organization in every state, and this doesn't go across party lines, by the way, it is in party lines, it's bureaucracy. The top of those boards are sometimes nominated, sometimes they're just lifetime bureaucrats. These are not political entities, they're just political bureaucracies. We need to get some underlying issues there fixed. As long as insurance is becoming ubiquitous, that's one of the good things about the Affordable Care Act, is that a lot more people have insurance than used to have insurance. The percentages of people that are uncovered are much lower. That's intended to keep the cost down for everyone, and it, strangely enough, it has. By keeping costs down, it just means it didn't rise as fast. The other problems haven't been dealt with, and there's a lot of problems that got added to the mix with the Affordable Care Act. We need to throw aside some of our partisanship here and look at the actual problems as they sit, instead of looking at it as the government should pay for it or the private citizen should pay for it. Those are the extreme positions. Most people don't think that paying higher taxes is going to make the costs go down. It's just moving the costs around. They would like to have an easier system to understand, and that's where we need to start at the state levels. I think Texas would be a great leader here. If we could get Texas to say, let's pass similar laws so that our insurance companies can compete on the same playing field, so that our constituents, our voters, who are also the customers of these companies, will know what they're spending and where the money's going. Anyway, I'm out of time for this week. I hope I didn't bore everyone out of their wits. So if you would like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail during the weeks and live people, or weekend, and live people during the week. The number to call locally is 254-947-1111. You can reach that same line toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. Although, why they call it toll-free when you still have, it goes against your time on your cell phone. It's an antiquated system there. Anyway, you can contact me directly at jake@tpwc.com, as in the personal wealth coach. You can contact Jeff at jeff@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage. We've got podcasts of this episode and prior episodes going back quite a ways. Good newsletters are on there. So check us out. See what you think. We've got the newsletters, by the way, talk in depth about some of the things that I talked about today. So until next week, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.